In a scenario where everything, like Iran, is facing destruction by the United States and Bashar al-Assad is going to be assassinated, that Russia is going to do nothing. What do you think of?
That is not easy question.
Hi everyone, I'm here in Moscow. I'm with the great Professor Alexander Dugin. Thank you so much for having me here.
You're welcome.
And my audience might be new to your work. You're a philosopher here, and you are, you know, you mainly focus on politics and the multipolar world. And I was wondering if you could give a few introductory sentences about what is the multipolar world, and to our audience that maybe they don't know about it.
Well, a multipolar world, it is not just a strategical picture of the balance of powers in the present day situation. It is as well a kind of philosophy, first of all. Multipolarity is, first of all, philosophy. And the philosophy of multipolarity is based on the presumption, on the main idea, that there is no such thing as humanity. There are plurality of the human civilizations with the plurals, and this plurality cannot be identified with only Western European world. So, but if we consider the majority of the humanitarian sciences, with some exceptions, the structure of this global humanitarian sciences is based on the principle that it is only one way, only one humanity, that is something like the Western civilization, that is a kind of avant-garde, something that goes ahead of all the rest of the humanity, and that is called the West. And this presumption that we only one line of progress, of development, of the social changes and political, economical structures, all that is Western, first of all, and secondly, it is global. So we are dealing with the exaggerated image of projection of the Western values, Western norms, Western principles, for example, human rights, human being as individual, liberation from traditions, modernization of the society, the abandon of the traditional relations between the sexes, destruction of the family, creation of contractual relations between the people, introducing of the market economy everywhere, and political democracy and civil society. And that is not Western. That is considered to be general, universal. And we are dealing with only one civilization that is already here, or it will be here tomorrow in some time, and that creates a kind of unipolar world vision or globalist world vision. There is the world of tomorrow is already present in the Western civilization, and tomorrow everybody will be exactly like that. So there will be no more states, languages, races, cultures, religions. There will be one world state, one world government, one type of people everywhere, with the same gadgets, with the same things, and following the line of the Western technological, and political, economical, strategical, industrial development. So that is unipolar ideology.
Yes.
Today presented by globalism. So globalist. Yes. But what is important, this vision is distributed in all society. It prevails not only in the West, it prevails as well in the East. For example, education, sciences in Islamic world, in Russia or in China or at India, in Africa, in Latin America, everywhere we share the same unipolar vision. All our sciences are based on that. Humanitarian and natural. And multipolarity is a kind of alternative vision. So it starts with the affirmation that we are dealing with different humanities. There is one Western humanity and not Western humanities. For example, Chinese humanity, Indian humanity, Russian, Eurasian humanity, Islamic humanity, African humanity. And they are more or less the same as civilizations with the S. So multipolarity accepts not only the difference in the speed of the presumably unique, universal way of the historical development, following the example of the West, but affirms and believes that each civilization has its own goal, its own direction, follows its own principles, and represent totally autonomous and sovereign world, sovereign cosmos. And that is, for example, Islamic society is hiding its own vision of the future, of the past, of the identity, of what is good, what is bad, what is acceptable, what is despisable, so deplorable. So each civilization is considered to represent a kind of planet. So our planet is the planet of the planets. So our humanity is the humanity of the humanities. Our human, earthly civilization is the kind of sum of the civilizations of the earth, Russian earth, Islamic earth, Western earth. So there is not only one humanity, only one society, only one time and space and history. We are dealing with the plurality. And these civilizations should be accepted as such, as they consider themselves, not projecting on them what we think about them from outside. So we need to be honest with them, to accept their principles and to deal with them accordingly. That is multipolarity. And when we try to inscribe or pull this multipolarity in the concrete reality, we see that it is not just fantasy or just philosophy. It is already something that is happening on the international level. Mm-hmm. So that is multipolarity. That is the club of BRICS. BRICS, where we see all these civilizations present, except the Western. So Russian, Chinese, Islamic, African, Indian, and Latin American. So the multipolarity as well could be described as a manifestation of new actors of main international relations, not national state anymore, as was before, but these civilizations represent something like civilizational state or civilization state. And this term is often used in China, in Russia, for description of our political structures. So the civilization state, it is new actor of international relations. But it is not just a fixation or the name for international order, but as well that is a kind of manifestation of the alternative philosophical vision. So first of all, multipolarity is the alternative philosophy.
So I'm going to play devil's advocate, because I've actually met people who believe in this unipolar world. The globalists, they think there should be no borders, they support all of the wars, They push all of the color revolutions, even in Iran. And they argue with me that I am hypocritical because I'm calling, for example, in my own country, Syria, like resisting the Al-Qaeda terrorists and, you know, ISIS, and how they wanted to force people to live in a certain way. But at the same time, I don't support the color revolution, for example, in Iran. And they say, well, shouldn't these human rights for women not to wear a scarf, they should be universal. You know, this is their idea, like the universal nature of what is right and for some people and not others. My argument would have been, well, you know, let people decide how they want to live. But in my country, we are deciding our own. We have a different history. We have Christians in our country. We have people who are, you know, historically different to this the rest of the Muslim world. Including Muslims themselves, just culturally. So, but the argument they would say is that no, the unipolar way is the better way. And I would like to get to the philosophical heart of if you agree. If, you know, maybe we haven't made a statement of why multipolarity is better. Even we can say that there'll be less wars, but some people will say that the wars are necessary in answer to that.
So, first of all, we could not answer seriously this question in the propaganda way. So, first of all, we should make reality check. In the humanity, there are those who share unipolar world with all the arguments that, for example, they say that there should be universal laws applied to all societies, but why impose on one society, for example, Iranian one, something that the majority of Iranian or all Iranians reject? Why? And reasons on the side of those who are in favor of unipolarity, that is because in the West it is like that. So Western experience and Western history and development of Western culture, Western society, they have led to such, for example, absence of the scarf by women. But what is interesting that Christian tradition obliged the women, obliged the women to have the scarves and obliged the men, the grown-up men, to have the beards. So that is nothing Christian or nothing especially Western, that is modern. So, and if the Western world has done such shift from their traditional society to the modern society, that doesn't mean that others should absolutely follow the same example. And we see this resistance against modernity, not only outside of the West, but inside of the West. There are many conservatives that would like to conserve their own traditions, values, customs, behaviors inside the Western society. There are so many Christians in the West who don't accept modernity, LGBT values, cosmopolitanism, and other things. So when unipolarism, that is the faith that is belief in universality of the modernity, of the Western modernity, not only of the West. So it is just the part of the Western heritage that coincides with these values. For example, 50 years ago, the same-sex marriage would be strictly forbidden and would consider in majority of the American states, for example, as something like public indecent behaviors, or maybe crime. So now, they affirm that only same-sex marriage adopted by the law is something that corresponds to the universal norms and values. So it is completely new, brand new, but they consider that as absolute. And if tomorrow something happens that will prohibit same-sex marriage, that for them that will be as well absolute truth. So each day absolute truth that not only is accepted by those who want that, but it is imposed on those who don't want it. So that is very, very shaky ground to affirm that those who fight for unipolar world, they are fighting for really real universal values, because it's just brand new that is shared by the small part of the humanity, and is radical and brutally imposed and enforced to the other, to the rest of it. So multipolarity doesn't judge what set of value is better or worse globally or absolutely. It just accepts that, for example, for Islamic society, it is normal to follow Sharia law or Islamic rule, and with respect of the history of one country. In one country it is allowed, in other, for example, some element of, for example, of behavior in other Islamic country, it is prohibited. So it depends on the cultural, historical experience. And in Russian society, we radically reject same-sex marriages. We reject individualism as such. We have a totally different set of values proper to us. We could change them as well, from Tsarist time to Soviet time, from Soviet time to modern Russia. But there is something that unites all the periods of our history, that is the kind of the core of the identity that could change on the superficial level, but it rests the same. So idea is that civilization is something that lasts long. It is not just of today. So any moment, any historical moment is just the chain, the element of the chain, that that goes through the centuries, and all these historical moments, they are present inside of the culture as spirit of the people, as our psychology, traditions, in all that creates a kind of special kind of identity that, according to those who are for unipolar world, should be transformed, changed, or abolished. And from the point of view of those who are in favor of multipolarity, it should be respected, accepted, affirmed or reaffirmed, defended, and that is the kind of two possible reaction on what is going on. And humanity is split now. It's two part, unipolarist on the side of the West, and those in the agents of unipolarity in outside in the other countries, and those who begin to accept the multipolar consciousness, who more and more find themselves to be on the alternative half, and this that is much more important than, for example, difference between Salafi, Shia, more modernized version of Islamic society, because all of Islamic self-conscious powers reject the Western pattern. They try to defend their proper identity, and the West and unipolarists, they are playing precisely on the differences. They try to divide and rule. And Putin has said recently, yesterday, that our enemies, unipolarists. They always seek to divide and rule.
Yes.
And we, multipolarists, we are in search of unification and leadership. So we need to unite, integrate and lead, not divide and rule. They're totally two different approaches. And now, I think, when we have recovered a little bit, we Russians, about the difficult periods of Ukrainian campaign, we feel ourselves more and more in position, in the position to give to this multipolarity, multipolar philosophy, the shape, intellectual shape, political shape, geopolitical shape. And I think that recent visit of President Putin into Arab Emirates and Saudi Arabia, and after that immediately the meeting with Raisi, with President of Iran, is the clear example how it works. Two contradictory poles, Sunni, Arabic, Saudi and Islam, and Shia, Persian, Iranian Islam, they are totally in total contradiction. They are united, put together in the context of defense of the multipolarity by a Russian leader. So it is not just defense of our national interests. It's something much more. It is about philosophy. And I think that is a clear example how multipolarity works. So in a way, they try to divide us. For example, one type of Muslims against the other. We should block that. We should try not to to fuel these debates or contradictions. They could exist, but we need to understand what is the main enemy of all of us. And that is message as well for many Salafi. Salafi, when you ask Salafi who is the main enemy, they say, Shia, secular Islam, Assad, Baathist, Russians, Christians, Kurds, but they forget that the main enemy, they are not those mentioned figure, the global West, that has nothing to do with radical Islam, which has nothing to do with Islam at such, and it prevails. So let us first of all unite our power to establish multipolar system, and inside of this system we will. After that, only after that, not before, we can try to find the balance of or harmony. We should try to harmonize our inner contradictions. So yeah. What is I think why a civil war in Syria should be stopped? That those who are for Assad and who has won finally have won, those who have won more or less.
Yes, and not those, yet completely.
Yes,
no, but soon maybe.
Because the West fuels the United States fuels this conflict.
Of course.
Without that, the situation would be completely different.
Of course.
And that is why I think I suggest. To understand the strategy of the main enemy, they try to divide us before we gain independence, before. That is the moment. We could solve contradiction after, but what American troops do in the Syrian territory, American military bases, they should be totally... they should get out. And after that...
We 100% agree.
And after that, we could... try to find a solution for all the parts in the conflict.
So I want to move then to the Middle East. And one thing you said, which is important, I think, that the multipolar world needs leadership. And I think a lot of us look towards Russia as the leader and the philosophical heart of that. Because historically, in the bipartisan world, you know, you had the US and Russia with its, you know, Soviet ideology. But now the multipolar world, you know, always thinks there's China is emerging, but Confucius, you know, this is different to, especially for the Middle Eastern people, like proximity wise and culture wise, I think we historically look towards Russia for leadership in terms of multipolarity and to be a front against US hegemony. So with that leadership role and with what's happening at the moment, I guess we have to move to the conflicts. I will go to Gaza before I go back to Ukraine and Palestine. So for a lot of people in the world, in the Middle East, but also now throughout the world, the Palestinian situation and the genocide there and the reaction of the world to that is going to be a litmus test to see whether this multipolarity is actually something that's real or if the unipolar US hegemony is the reality. Because they're currently, you know, in spite of all of their fanciful ideas about no racism and rules-based order, they are committing, they're allowing a genocide to be committed. So if they're allowed to do this and the multipoles of the world can do nothing, then how, I mean, for people, they will lose hope in the idea of a multipolar world and they will think, well, we can only kneel to the ruling hegemon. And I understand that there's limits to what everybody can do, especially because even Syria and Iran have limits to what they can do right now. So the question is there a plan? Like, is there some sort of idea of how we can win and prevent the genocide? And I will have a follow-up question to that after you answer this question.
That's very interesting. So what if we agree with the main principle that we are living in a transition from unipolarity to the multipolarity, so we need to accept that unipolarity, that is something that already here, that is, that already exists, and multipolarity that is emerging. So Russia is not continuation of the Soviet Union, it is a re-emerging pole, and it could not be anymore that one of the two poles. So Russia, yes. Russian leadership in the multipolarity is very much different from Russian leadership in the bipolar world. Mm. So we have no universal ideology to propose or to impose or to suggest. We could not afford one against one confrontation with the West. We are too weak, to say the truth. But the only way what we react, it is to save our own sovereignty and to help to the other to establish their, to the other poles, help to establish their sovereignty. So that is not one sovereignty against the two sovereignties. That is multiple sovereignties against one sovereignty. And we see that the support and help and allowing of the West on this unipolar structure to Israeli to accomplish genocide in Palestine, it is the clear example what unipolarity is. It is just that unipolarity fights back. Unipolarity doesn't want to let multipolarity to appear. It reacts. It fights back. So this clear support to nationalism, to racism, Israeli racism, and genocide of Palestinians, it is about... It is like agony of unipolarity, and that as well the measure of the power of the dragon. So unipolar dragon is wounded, but not killed, and Russia protests against that. Russia shows support for Palestinians, the victim of this genocide. An Islamic world. Sees, observes what is going on, but that is the turn of Islamic world to start its own war. We have own war in Ukraine, and it is difficult to fight against the collective West. So we experience very hard times fighting against, not against Ukrainians, against the West in Ukraine. So, and this time we
and in Syria.
In Syria was easier for us,
of course,
because
yeah.
nobody expected us to help Assad.
Yes.
And in these concrete regional situation, we didn't experience such difficulty. We came, we helped to save Assad, to save state, the Syria. Not we didn't let the collapse of the situation like in Iraq or in Libya. We saved. We have saved Syria.
Thank you
for that. But in Ukraine, we're confronted with much more direct situation. That
yes.
is the war against the NATO. The NATO leads this war against us using Ukrainian Nazis, and that is very hard experience. So we are fighting our war. Putin is, I agree, the leader of multipolarity, but not of bipolarity.
No.
Putin cannot say to Americans, stop here, don't allow your Israeli proxy to kill innocent people in Gaza. We cannot say. We can say, but they don't hear us.
Of course.
We are in fight. But I am a little bit astonished by the more or less mild reaction of Islamic world.
Yeah.
So now it is exam for the Islamic poll to enter its own war. And what we see? So Israeli representative in Saudi Arabia. So there is no will. So if there will be no will to be to have sovereignty, there will be no multipolarity. Multipolarity could arrive only if we put in the limits unipolarity. But where is the Gaza? Where is Palestine? It is Texas. It is Florida. It is California. No, it is far away from American civilization. It is in the middle of Islamic civilization, and Islamic leaders are divided. They could not find, and until now, the power to overcome minor differences and to create a kind of real army to save Arab Islamic population, and there are not only Islamic, but there are Christians there.
Yes.
But nevertheless, that is a kind of challenge to Islam as a civilization, as a pole. And I think we will have delayed reaction. So Islamic societies, present-day Islamic countries, are not ready enough to enter in the direct confrontation with the West. No country alone could afford that. Nobody. But if Islamic country from Indonesia, Pakistan with its nuclear weapon, Iran, Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Emirates, Egypt, Turkey, Libya, Morocco, Algeria, Yemen would join United. There will be no Israel in one day.
Of course.
But now the leaders of Islamic world, not Russia, should take this step.
This is what I want to get the conversation to, because I heard you say that a lot, and I agree with you. The reaction is not to the level that you would expect. There's a reaction on the street, of course, that is increasing, but the governments are not reflecting the reaction of the people. And I think part of that is because those governments are very much puppets that are being paid for by the West. I mean, Egypt is one of the... After Israel, Egypt receives the second most amount of aid from America. Jordan comes after that. And then, they're kind of paying them protection money to prevent them from acting in the will of their people. They're saying, here's some money, keep your borders quiet as much as you possibly can. So we have a problem. We have a major problem in the Islamic world. But also, I wanted to, and I agree with you on most everything, but I wanted to like challenge maybe the notion of the Islamic world being one pole. It might be more than one pole. And the way that I see it as someone from the Levant is that, and increasingly so since the war in Syria, where we had the, you know, interestingly, the Salafi world did unite, but they didn't unite against Israel. You know, they united against Syria and Iran and resistance axis. So, you know, when I think about the Islamic world, I think about people who fought against the resistance and the resistance axis on the behest of the United States and Israel. So we're in a very, and I think that they're tired now because they spend all of their energy fighting us. And Syria is also tired because, you know, we've been destroyed almost. Iran is maybe the only, exactly. So now this thing has started in Palestine and not everybody is ready. Like, especially Syria is not ready. But unfortunately, I think they didn't have a choice but to start it now, especially with everything else that was happening around them. But I would argue, and I would love to hear your opinion, that the Levant area, I feel it's like a separate pole. And historically, you know, the heart of civilization of the even the Islamic world was, a lot of the time, the center was Damascus. And also the what makes the Levant, I mean, so a lot of the people in the Gulf Arab world do see us as other. You know, like we dress differently to them, we eat differently to them. So there's limitation to what we can expect from them, because they will say, well, it's not our fight, it's the fight of the people of the Levant. They will say, well, you know, we're historically Aramaic speakers. And I would argue that there's Christians in the Levant, especially Orthodox Christians, and their numbers are dwindling in Palestine, although there's a lot of them in the diaspora. But Orthodoxy, if we want to see the rise in Orthodoxy, which I think a lot of we're seeing now in Russia, we can't forget about the heart of where Orthodoxy started. Like, without Palestine, without some Orthodox Christians left in the birthplace of Orthodoxy, how can we see a return of Orthodoxy? So I do agree with you. I think we need to see more from the Muslim world. But even myself as a Muslim from the Levant, I would love to see more of a presence of an Orthodox Christian voice that says, you know, the Holy Land is not just for Jews, it's not just for Muslims, but it's also for Christians and Orthodox Christians especially. What do you think about that, Paul?
I think that in Russia we have very interesting example how Orthodox Christians could not only coexist with Islamic population, but to be the brothers, to be the same, to form the united society. And Salafis tried to destroy as well this harmony that lasts for many, many hundred years. And Salafi movement was instrumentalized, weaponized by the West. They serves to destroy Arab nationalism, pro-Soviet tendencies, and Sufi orders, Shia group. So they started as the instrument of the West in the fight against the East, against the Soviet Union. So and they continue to fight against resistance powers in Levant and Middle East and against Eurasianism everywhere. So, but now I think, but nevertheless, they had one thing that Islamic country lacked. They have imagined very criminal but unificating ideology. And that Islamic State, Salafi, they has suggested to discard any differences of the Islamic societies and to impose on them very simplified version of how we need to understand Islam without traditional mashabs. That was the kind of, like a Wahhabi.
Yes, the Wahhabis.
But, and I think that Christian population of the Levant is not, to say seriously, very important factor in this, unfortunately. But that is the case. They existed in the Ottoman Empire, they existed in Umayyad Empire, Christians. They existed in Abbasid Empire. So they in Caliphate, they had their place. And it lasted more than 1,000 years. Only when the liberals came, when they they began this bloody religion fight that didn't exist for centuries, So, but I think that what we need it is to imagine a new version of multipolar Islamic pole. So not just unification of this of a kind of simplified radical extremist ideology, but to find a way how unite without leveling the differences, without annihilating the differences. And there are four caliphates of main caliphate. First of Muhammad, second Umayyad with the capital in Damascus, precisely, and that is why in the many eschatological prophecies Damascus was mentioned. So that is why it is in the center of our attention now, Syria and Damascus. Umayyad caliphate, second. Third was Abbasid caliphate, precisely with the center in Levant, in the Mesopotamia, in Baghdad. So that was a very important time. And after that, fourth caliphate was Ottoman Empire. I consider them from Christian, Orthodox, multipolar point of view. I would suggest to Islamic world today to reconsider the value of Abbasid Caliphate, because it was something unique. It was based on the flourishment of all juridical schools of Islam were formed in Abbasid Caliphate. There was peaceful cohabitation and coexistence of Shia, of Sunni, of radical Shia, including different kind of Iranian population that gave such impact on the Abbasid culture, with Greek tendency, Greek philosophy that was called Aristotelian, but that was in the reality Neoplatonic, and that was prosperity for Arab, non-Arab, Iranian, all kinds of people and traditions and original traditions, all kind of that will flourishment of the Sufism with all the different tendencies, all think intellectually, ideologically of value in Islam, in my opinion, were created, imagined, and developed philosophy, Al-Farabi, Al-Kindi, Ibn Sina. Everything, the greatness of Islam, that was precisely in the Abbasid Caliphate. And now Iraq is liberated from American, more or less Americans. There are the military bases, but Iraq takes more and more the consciousness of its sovereignty. There is Syria, there is Iran, there is resistance all around. Iraq, and some part of Iraqis, they are the part, organic part of resistance. But what I think that resistance in present day situation, Lebanon, in Syria, and with Hezbollah, with Iran, lacks some meta vision, the great vision. Resistance lacks a kind of some flexible ideology that could address, for example, Sunnis, Sufi, different kind of Muslims and not Muslims. So I think that Ottoman Empire that inspires Erdogan, for example, is too limited, including in the last period. It is not appealing. It is not attractive, I would say. And Turkish rule was not easy to bear for Arabs. So that was some kind of natural refuse to Ottoman plans of neo-Ottoman plans of Erdogan. For that reason, I think that precisely Abbasid Empire could be a kind of that was multipolar inside. It was multipolar empire, caliphate, and that accepted and not rejected plurality of the tendency inside of Islam. There were debates, contradictions, but all inside of unity. And I think that was very fruitful, because Abbasid Caliphate gave the great philosophies, great cultures, great spiritual, mystical movements, gave all the richness of Islam, Arab Islam, not Arab Islam, has flourished in the Abbasid Caliphate. And now Iraq is in search of its new identity, because it could not afford any more national state with Kurds, with Shia, Sunni, the contradictions with this American imposed secular liberal version. So it is obvious naturally that Iraq will in search and is in search of how to develop in the future. And I think that is not only the problem of Iraq, the problem of Levant, the problem of resistance, the problem and the challenge and opportunity as well of all the Islamic world. So, but I suggest to insist more on Islamic education. If Islamic people, if Muslims of today would know better Islamic history, they could be influenced or inspired by different examples. So it is so rich. Cases, forms, states, cultures inside of Islamic history, and the West tries to impose on Islam some reduced version, some caricatures. Yes. So Islamic tradition and culture is much richer, much wider than the West presumes. Yes. And that affects Muslims themselves. They become like Westerners. They deal with caricature. I think that Salafi tendency is not fundamentalist, is not traditionalist. No. It's something new, totally new.
Definitely.
It is appealing for the people who knows nothing about Islam, has no access to the great wisdom and the culture, because you could study it all your life. It is not enough to have one small portion of the richness of Islam.
A lot of them came from the West, actually.
Exactly.
So that makes perfect sense. You know, what we're talking about with multipolar world resisting unipolarity, essentially, I think it's happening now. I think the wars in Ukraine and in Palestine and in Syria and in Iraq are all examples now, even in South America with Venezuela. So in my opinion, we're facing a new type of war, maybe a third world war. And these are all different fronts of that war. And I think Iran's was able to help Russia a lot during the conflict in Ukraine.
Exactly.
Yes, and
we're very grateful to Iranians.
Yes, and of course Syria would love to have helped more. Unfortunately, the position is in a much weaker position. I know that Assad actually offered Russia help during the Georgian War, long before the civil war happened. So obviously there's some sort of a bloc forming. And in keeping with that, I want to ask, let's say that the war in Palestine conflagrates, and already there have been threats by Israel to assassinate Assad. The resistance forces are fighting the Americans, they're bombing the bases. We have the Houthis taking the boats. This can expand potentially to a very open front in Lebanon, at least. And this front could move further with Iran and Syria and not even Israel, maybe even the Americans. And a lot of Israelis that I've heard from have this sense of security that Russia will do nothing, that Russia will remain neutral in this scenario and just watch everything in the resistance axis be destroyed. And they cite the fact that Russia has had good relations with Israel and that there are many Israelis of Russian descent in Israel as the reason why they believe that in the scenario where everything, like Iran is facing destruction by the United States and Bashar al-Assad is going to be assassinated, that Russia is still going to do nothing. What do you think of
that? It is not an easy question, but now we are fighting United States of America. We are in fight, in war. So that means that we already participate in the war. That the problem is that Islamic world or resistance doesn't participate yet on the full scale.
In the scenario that it does.
Yes, so yeah. For example, if we consider that United States of America should fight in two fronts at the same time, that will weaken at least one of them. Mm-hmm. For example, if the start in the Middle East, the real war, immediately our troops will stand at Lvov, immediately, in 1 week. If they will be obliged, the West will be obliged to diversify their power, we immediately wins in Ukraine. But
yes.
Russia, with Ukraine won, as submitted, is different Russia. So, I don't believe that they could invade Syria or destroy Iran in 1 day, in 1 week. No, that will be the war. If there will be the war, we are already participating in this war.
But in a different front, the Ukrainian.
Yes,
front.
If there will be the problem with Venezuela, there will be the third front. And it could happen with Britain, Guyana. Now the conflict is emerging. If there will be Taiwan problem, there will be fourth.
Front. Yes.
And imagine.
This would be great, actually.
Absolutely. Imagine if now we could stay in one front when all the power of the West is on the side of Ukrainians. And Ukrainians, more than that, they are Russians. That is why they fight so well. And they are, for example, yes, fighting with Polish, Germans, and French. It will be a joke, but we are fighting ourselves.
Yeah.
And they are strong Russian men and women. Mm-hmm. And they now are totally under influence of the West.
Yes.
It is civil war, but we are fighting.
This is exactly what I wanted to discuss.
Yes.
It's a civil war.
Civil war.
This is how we Syrians, when we think of Ukrainians, we think of them as Russians.
Absolutely,
it's a ridiculous distinction.
Yes.
But so it's a civil war.
Civil war, exactly.
And now, since Syria, I have a question on this. This is why I'm excited and I'm interrupting you. But please, maybe finish your thought, and I will come up with the second question.
But my idea is we shouldn't be afraid or to start the new front because it will weaken the enemy on the other front.
Uh-huh.
But if we understand that we are fighting not only for Russian national interests, for Arab, Syrian, Hezbollah, Lebanon, Palestinian, if we fight the same war, America fights, obviously, the same war. Least trust. Liz Truss recently has said, if you consider Ukraine, Gaza, and Taiwan three wars, you are wrong. Three fronts of the same war. So they understand that very well. We understand that very bad. So if
exactly. They know the enemy. We don't know our friends.
Absolutely.
I think that's
exactly.
A major problem.
And that's why they win. They win because they divide and rule.
Yes.
And Iranians see better than everybody else.
That's
Assad
true.
Sees better than everybody else that if you help Russia now, Russia will help you forever, not just now. And the same front, if you open the front, the real front against Israel, Russia fighting with United States, not with Israel, will be obliged to continue fight against the West, United States, in other front. Maybe not directly, but Iran doesn't fight directly with the troops.
Not yet,
but that will...
Depends on how... how serious... evolves.
Absolutely. So to expand the front against the main enemy that is called unipolar world order, it is in interest of everybody. So I wouldn't be sure that the West fighting us again in Ukraine could afford the victory, could afford the victory soon in fighting against at least all the Middle East.
I think they will let go of the Ukraine front in favor of the Palestinian front.
But as with when Ukraine will be ours totally, there will be a new world. So there will be multipolarity. And our help in such situation would cost for the enemy 100 times more than now. They could detend us in Ukraine. With second front, they could not, they will be not able to detend anybody in situation. Mm-hmm. And if second and third front or in Korea will open, they are doomed.
Yes.
The West is doomed. It could not afford to fight five war. But we will attack at them in different points of the planets with different means, and we will either reduce their pretension to their part of the world, that would be human solution, or we will destroy them totally.
So with the Ukrainians, this is my question about the nature of it being a civil war. Because, you know, in Syria, we had our own civil war. And we had to fight our own people. Basically, they moved the front to our territory, which is actually a negative thing. You know, right now, it's happening. What's happening in Palestine is somehow the front has moved into the unipolar territory, which is within Israel, and which is, you know, basically the right hand, or if it's the United States is this side of the hand, Israel is the other side. It's the same hand. So we've yes, the only like silver lining, but Ukraine and Russia's war is a civil war, and my concern is because you have these familial ties with Ukraine, is kind of the same concern I have with Syria, is how do you mend the wound in future? Because your history with the Ukrainian people is going to be very long. And I think also, you know, at the moment, Russia has concentrated on taking all of the areas next to the sea to, and for strategic reasons, you know, Donbass is still yet to come. But I think maybe in order to mend, it should be all of Ukraine, including Kiev, that is included into Russia.
Absolutely. Into new entity, not necessarily Russian Federation. It will be new entity, or something like Soviet Union or Tsarist Empire. The new entity where Ukrainian people will participate as such, will not be suppressed or Russified. They are already Russians. So I think, in that sense, to say the truth, I see no problem in that. So how to deal with Ukrainians after the war? I'm Ukrainians myself. I know that is the question of the choice of identity. And Ukrainians are very, very flexible, very flexible. When they remark we are winning, immediately everything will be different. Immediately, and we will not have too much time to re-educate them. There will be some problem, but and Russians, how we can manage to create such huge empire? Because we know how to deal with those who have lost their battle against us. We don't continue. We don't take revenge. We accept them as brothers and sisters, and that Ukraine. That is why Ukraine is doomed, because it constructs its identity on the hatred, and that provoke alternative reaction and hatred. But We don't bear the hatred and revenge in our hearts. So they are still human. They are still Russians. In our opinion, they are still ours.
Mm-hmm.
And we are other for them. And for us, they are not other. They are ourselves, but it is a kind of sin. When we can hate sin, but being Christians, we should not hate sinner.
Right.
Sinner is obsessed by the sin. He is under influence of some strange entity, and that has entered in him. But it is exercise. We need to liberate the possessed person from the demons living inside. But we hate demons, but we don't hate the possessed. And that difference is in our civil war with Ukraine is much easier than white against red. Because in the civil war, whites against reds, both sides were possessed by demons. Who should make exercise? Exorcism wasn't clear. It is not clear yet now. So, and with Ukraine, it's totally clear. They are Russians who have betrayed their Russianhood, their tradition. They came with the main enemy of tradition, of identity, with LGBT, with
NATO.
That is betrayal not of us, but of themselves. And that is why I think that there will be no problem after the victory. The victory is problematic just now. It is better, but it is because we appeared to for ourselves to be weaker than we pretend. We thought
Russia is never as strong as it looks, as weak as it looks.
Yes. That in the military way we proved to be weaker than we hoped. But economically, we are better than we feared. So there are the miscalculation on both parts, as everybody recognizes now. And I think that, but now we are improving. We are in a good way. And so I have no fear of the war or in the Middle East. I think it will start sooner or later, and very hard war. I expected it sooner. Maybe it will be delayed, but it is. If Zapad wouldn't stop, if the West wouldn't stop, there will be the war. But Biden administration, new cons, they are decisive to continue their politics and support for Israel and to accomplish genocide of Palestinians. So I think we should not fear the war. We should not welcome the war. It starts when it starts, but we should be prepared to the long fight for multipolarity, and we should see into the future in very positive and optimistic mood.
Fantastic. I have one last question for you, because most of my audience are from the West. They're mainly American. And so I wanted to move there very quickly. I know I've taken a lot of your time, so I apologize. Essentially, you know, the unipolar world and the ideology that it's pushing, the globalist, the wokeism, the LGBTQ stuff, it's resulting in the hyper-individualism, the hyper-connectivity over the internet. People are no longer able to form deep connections, and a lot of people are, like 65% of Americans are choosing, the men, young men, are choosing to remain alone. Marriage is dead. The birth rates in the West and even around the world are going down a lot. I think Korea, recently the birth rate in South Korea was 0.7. So it's not even a replacement statistic. So with the ideology of the unipolar world, we are heading to extinction. So it's almost like a fight for the survival of humanity to be against the unipolar world. My question is this. You mentioned the Abbas Caliphate and how we can go backwards. A lot of people don't believe it's possible to go back. They think that time only moves in one direction, or they believe in the Kali Yoga where it's cyclic. But is it possible to reverse the trend? I wonder, have you ever heard of the mouse utopia or the rat utopia experiment, where, you know, there's a behavioral sink, and at a certain point when society collapses, there's no reversal, there's no, not even a cycle, there's just all the way down to extinction. And a lot of people are having this kind of defeated view of the world where there's no hope and we're all going to be finished and annihilated because of this transhumanist ideology. Is there hope? Can we reverse things? That is the last question.
Absolutely. I have deep conviction, deep belief that everything is reversible. Nothing disappears forever. And everything that has real meaning and a real being, or had real being, still have its place in being. Maybe it is hidden, maybe it is an occultation, but it is always here as a cult imam in the Shia tradition. There is always imam. You cannot imagine the world without imam. It could be open, it could be hidden. So, and that gives us possibility to reverse the logic of things in any situation, in the worst situation, still the redemption is possible. So, and that is as well the deep truth of Christian faith, because Christianity insists that the God has created the heart of the man with absolute freedom. And if you're absolutely free, you can make absolutely free choice in any situation. In the darkest corner of Kali Yuga, you are not doomed. You can resist, you can revolt, you can say no, you may be punished, you may be tortured, you may be killed, but you still save the dignity of the human being. And I have all the hope in American society, in European society, then in some special moment can reverse the line of, and can revolt against those killers who has usurped the power over their society, and they could restore the order, the dignity, the birth rate, the traditional values proper to the West, proper to their own sacred tradition. The West has lost the sacredness, but you cannot lose sacredness totally. It is hidden, but it is still here. You should discover it. It is difficult. It may be more difficult than ever, but it is still possible. So I believe the revival of American society, of American men and women, and I believe in the restoration of the great state and great normal traditional families in Christianity and the sacredness, as well for the European society. And we don't fight against them. We are fighting against globalists that misrepresent their own society, and they and the Western society is the first victim of all those killers, those maniacs, those fanatics who now lead the Western world. They lead the world and Western world, first of all, into the abyss. Yes. We should resist, we should react, we shouldn't be afraid, because the truth will win any its enemies.
Well, thank you so much for your time and this excellent discussion. It's an honor and honor to finally meet you and to be here today. So thanks. Great. Again. Hopefully another time.